Hi, this is Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire, here with today's edition of Soundbite, our daily interview series featuring researchers, thought leaders, and newsmakers in the world of high-performance computing. Today we'll be talking with Jacek Jakowski, a computational scientist at the National Institute for Computational Sciences at Oak Ridge National Lab in the University of Tennessee. He and his team are using the Kraken supercomputer to explore quantum effects and nanoscale materials. Hi, Jacek.
Hello. I'm happy to be here. How are you, Nicole?
Very good. Thank you very much. If you could, give us an overview of your research at the high level. What are you exploring, and what's the end benefit?
Okay, so we have developed a new quantum dynamics method for studies of the several hundred atom system, and we are interested in studies of quantum nuclear effects and the role of this effect in these nanoscale materials for the applications in energy research and advanced materials. So our new method, combines a quantum trajectory representation of nuclear wave function with some efficient quantum chemical methods to treat electrons. The theory behind this method is based on the so-called Bohmian interpretation of quantum mechanics, and this Bohmian interpretation of quantum mechanics, what we do, we represent our nuclear wave function for a selected light nuclei into, we represent this wave function in an ensemble of so-called quantum trajectories. So there can be like 1,000 or a few thousand of quantum trajectories, and these trajectories, each trajectory holds some small information about the quantum nature of the proton or hydrogen. So the quantum nuclear effects are introduced through the so-called quantum forces corrections. And then we have implemented it in such a way that we have a switch and we can turn on or off these quantum forces, so we can clearly see where the quantum effects come from. So including quantum nuclear effects in the dynamics is very difficult, and almost all simulations, quantum chemical simulations, neglect the quantum nature of the nuclei in hope that these effects are insignificant. But actually, the heavier nuclei are, this assumption is more valid. But hydrogen and its isotopes are the lightest nuclei, and often those effects cannot be neglected. And actually, in our studies, we show one of the cases in which the neglecting quantum nuclear effects can lead to qualitatively different results. And so in general, the interest from in these studies comes from energy and materials applications such as hydrogen absorption, adsorption and storage energy conversion, isotope effects, fuel cells and proton transfer to membranes, kinetic isotope effects in some biological materials, and also studies of nuclear motion and performance of molecular devices such as organic photovoltaic devices.
Mm-hmm. Wow, there's a broad range of potential applications for this research. I can only imagine how data and compute intensive these simulations must be. Is that correct?
This is correct. I mean, so it is very important in this type of simulation. It's very important to try to explore as much as possible inherent parallelism with on different level of parallelism with the theory. So and then particularly this quantum trajectory approach is very convenient way. It gives us a very convenient way to parallelize this quantum nuclear effects. In addition we describe this through these quantum trajectories, which are spread across several nodes on our machines, can be spread across several nodes. And then in addition, we have a different level of parallelism for the description of electrons.
Mm-hmm. And so much of your research then has been done, as we noted in the introduction, on the Cray XT5 Kraken supercomputer, correct?
This is correct. We can practically utilize maybe up to half of the Cray XT5 Kraken. So that is a few thousand nodes. We can utilize this, and then we have a very good scaling results. Our results are very good, so we're very excited about this, and we are looking forward into interesting scientific applications.
What are some of the benefits then of using that system? I'm sure in your research you've had access to a number of systems. Maybe I'm presuming that, and that's not the case. Having this kind of scale, I believe when it came out, it was a top 10 supercomputer for a couple of years. It's since dropped to some degree. But what does having that type of computational power lend to your research?
Oakridge is particularly good place for this type of research because there is a lot of expertise in computer science and then science domain scientists. So we have at NICS a lot of expertise in both ends. So basically, this is it's very fruitful. We can form very fruitful collaboration with a lot of groups. Of course, we can also use some other machines, but this was our main machines for the current simulation. Unfortunately, we will have to look for another machines, and we are about to make decision what will be our next focused machine. So we consider either some local machines at Oak Ridge or some other exit resources, maybe like Stampede.
I see. Yes, so the Kraken supercomputer is set to be retired. When does that go into effect again?
So unfortunately, National Science Foundation decided that it can no longer continue to we cannot continue to use Kraken machine. So we will be able to use until April 2014. So it's very soon.
What becomes of the machine after it's decommissioned?
So other possible machines in Oak Ridge are Titan, which is on the DOE side, Department of Energy side, and we have also some other newer Cray machines, but on the smaller scale. Those are funded through State of Tennessee, and also we have some Intel machine called Beacon. It has MIC accelerators, Xeon Phi accelerators. So those are our possible choices for a future.
What will that mean for your, I'm sure, complex code if you have to start looking at maybe new architectures or different systems with variable demands and capabilities?
Well, that would that means investment of time and funding because this requires, of course, porting the codes to exploit the machines require to use them optimally. They require a lot of effort on our side to develop the efficient code. So we would rather not to jump between different machines, but focus on one machine and use it for 2-3 years rather than use several different machines.
Right, versus porting everything over to CUDA or looking at a new architecture
right.
entirely.
Yes,
I understand. So when you look to future architectures for applications like this, and it seems to me like yours represents at least a somewhat medium-sized type of application like this, what do you need out of your systems in the future that either you don't have now or that, and these can be software or hardware questions. I mean, you have to consider the software when you're building a system. So what do you need that you don't have right now, and what's on your wish list, as it were?
On our wish list is... We have a long wish list both on every side. So we have a long list of the theory, which we are focusing on development of the theory and expanding the capabilities of our method. Then we have also a wish list on the implementation side, accelerators, hardware accelerators, GPU and MIC. And then we have also a list on the molecular simulations level, like what do we want to study. So basically, on the theory level, on the theoretical level, we want to expand capabilities of our methods into real-time electron dynamics, so we can couple motion of electrons and nuclei efficiently. We want to also include spin and other physical effects, physics into simulations. Then on the simulation side, we would really like to go into the 1,000 plus number of atoms, but that would require using the technology beyond the standard CPU. The reason for that is that the most computationally expensive part is electronic structure, and in our case, it scales cubically. So this cubic scaling basically means if we increase the number of the atoms from few hundred to 1,000, then the computational cost grows 8 times, so almost one order of magnitude. So basically, we would really need to use the hardware accelerator to speed up the calculation. So those are our main list, to port the code, to use efficiently the hardware accelerators, and those can be either mic or GPU. And we are hoping that with the OpenACC, we can have a code that will be sustainable for the next few years.
Right. That's interesting. So I know that you understand certainly the complexities of your own code. Do you have yourself a preference between GPUs, looking at the mic architecture? What sort of has your interest, or is it an equal balance between the two right now?
I think maybe my interest is right now a little bit more on the GPU side. That's because I have a little bit more experience with the GPUs than with the mics. It got me really interested. We have some preliminary GPU results, and those are very promising. So we're looking into, probably first we'll start working on GPU. And if we have enough human force, then at the same time we would like to try it on the mic side.
Right. And then you could hop into some other machines. You could run this perhaps, say, on Titan, which I'm sure for a researcher would be very exciting to do.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, ASIC, for your time today. We'll be following your research and other research projects out of your center. So take care, and thanks again.
Thank you, Nicole.